You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, where in the world is Edward Snowden? Nobody knows. Nobody's even sure if his flight to Moscow actually didn't happen, because nobody on the plane afterwards said, oh yeah, I recognize that guy. Maybe it didn't happen. Maybe it was just, you know, to throw people off the trail. I mean, there was that billionaire from Iceland who said he had a jet waiting to take him to Iceland if the Icelandic government said that they would take him. Maybe he said, hey, I can't go to Iceland, but can you take me to Ecuador or Cuba or who knows? I mean, he could be pretty much anywhere right now. It's looking like maybe the Russian government decided to lay hands on him, but nobody really knows. So we're going to have to keep an eye on this one. Meanwhile, over the weekend, I think the biggest kerfuffle around this was David Gregory on Meet the Press, asking Glenn Greenwald, who is a lawyer and a reporter, asking Glenn Greenwald, should you be prosecuted for releasing this stuff? This after David Gregory himself had released classified information on NBC. I don't recall, at least recently, maybe he did back in the day, David Gregory asking Obama administration officials if they were anticipating prosecuting Dick Cheney for releasing classified information, going after Valerie Plame, or other Bush administration officials. Now, I get it. The scooter was busted, you know, took the fall for that, shall we say. But or what about the fact that the Associated Press, Bloomberg, and the Washington Post all published the exact same stuff Glenn Greenwald did? David Gregory has not asked any of them if they're going to be prosecuted. I find this whole framing thing fascinating. I checked in with a South China Morning Post this morning, by the way. This is 4 or 5 hours ago, and now the story has migrated onto American media, and I'm guessing that Fox and the right wing are all over it. And in that article, they had, you know, exclusive to the South China Morning Post. This is the Hong Kong English language newspaper. Snowden took the job at Booz Allen just to get access to the NSA so he could leak the stuff. Really? If you read the article on the South China Morning Post, you know, what he said sort of suggests that. But I'm not sure that he actually meant to say that. But who knows? I don't want to be. I am not the appointed defender or prosecutor of Ed Snowden. The one thing that I do know is that if he did this because he believed that our country or private for-profit contractors in our country, or both, was doing something wrong, or were doing something wrong, and that needed to be exposed, that, A, that's a sign, in my opinion, of patriotism, and B, that makes you a whistleblower and not a leaker. Now, this is the other thing I found really interesting. You get up early and, you know, you just kind of look through the news. And I went over to the Financial Times, financialtimes.com. I used to actually have a subscription to the Financial Times. I used to receive it. Now that we live down in a marina, you can't get a newspaper. But I read it online. And the front page headlines on the Financial Times, of course, the Financial Times is probably the most credible international paper, at least when it comes to things that have to do with business and rich people and all that kind of stuff. But it's kind of the voice of the international establishment. I mean, you could argue that the Times of London used to play that role, but they've been bought by Rupert Murdoch, so nobody really takes them seriously any longer, just like the Wall Street Journal. Nobody takes it seriously anymore. Murdoch bought it, and a bunch of the actually good journalists there quit immediately. But the Financial Times, the headlines on the front page, all said whistleblower. NSA whistleblower in, you know, on the run. NSA, you know, I don't remember the headlines, but there were like three or four of them. And then you go over to the Washington Post site, and it says NSA leaker. I thought, this is really interesting, because whistleblowers get protection under the law, and leakers go to jail under the law. Arguably. So I just thought the whole thing was fascinating, this framing. And the larger question, and I'd like to ask your take on this as well. The larger question in my mind is patriotism dead? Or is it dying? If Ed Snowden did what he did because he believed himself to be a patriot, whether you do or not, you know, if he believed himself to be a patriot, is he an outlier? Is he the odd one in the bunch? The reason I ask this is because I'm old enough to remember a time in America when the American brand was first and everything else was subordinate to that. I remember back in the 70s, growing up in Michigan, if you bought a foreign-made car, you could just plan on it getting keyed. I mean, it was a fact of life. Now, Michigan is probably a little more militant about that than a lot of other states, but the auto industry was spread across at least a dozen states, and still is. So, and Sam Walton, I remember when the Walmarts first opened. They were, you know, Sam Walton, you know, Walmart, made in the USA. That was their slogan. And then Reagan came along. In the election of 1980, he took office in January of 81. And the first thing he said when he took office was, government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem. Now, this is the core libertarian thought virus meme. The government is the problem. And so for 30 years, people have been hearing this message. And for anybody who's, you know, under 40, this is basically the message they've heard, or even 45, this is basically the message they've heard their entire lives, their entire, you know, paying attention to politics lives, is the government is not the solution, and the government is the problem. And if government is the United States of America, it's like saying, you know, your country is the problem. So what then is the solution? Well, the solution, of course, is to privatize everything, turn it over to the Koch brothers or to the Wall Street billionaires and let them take care of it. And, of course, they're the ones funding this message. And to hell with the government. Now, you know, when you have 32 years of hate government, hate government, hate government, that translates into, in my opinion, in a lot of people's minds, hate America, hate America, hate America. And so when somebody stands up and says, no, I'm going to do what I believe in, because, I mean, Ed Snowden in that online dialogue with The Guardian a couple of weeks ago, somebody said, you know, what is America to you? And he said, a country worth dying for. This is a guy who volunteered to join the army after 9/11 to be shipped off to Iraq because he thought it was the right thing to do. Broke his legs in basic training, got him bounced out, but he volunteered. So has 32 years of Reaganomics, in addition to destroying our economy, also destroyed our patriotism? What do you think?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And David Srota has a great piece out, 10 questions for David Gregory. I'll share a few more of them with you after this. One minute past the hour, WikiLeaks has just come out. They seem to be choreographing this whole, where in the world is Edward Snowden thing. And, I mean, this is like becoming worthy of a John le Carré or a Robert Ludlum spy thriller. You know, it's I guess I'm dating myself with those titles, but in any case, it's WikiLeaks is saying, don't worry, he's in a safe place. Because I've been worried that he's in a Russian jail. I mean, the long arm of the United States is pretty potent stuff. Or maybe a Chinese jail. And President Obama has really declared war on whistleblowers in ways that we've never seen in the history of this country. Or rather, declared war on leakers, excuse me. I don't think I could say that he's declared war on whistleblowers. Although, in my opinion, some of these leakers have also been whistleblowers, and I think that in some cases you have to say the whistleblowing justifies the leaking. It's part of it. But then I'm not a lawyer, and, you know, fortunately, so I don't have to defend these guys. So Chuck, this is from David Sirota's piece. He says, later during Meet the Press discussion, during a Meet the Press discussion of Greenwald's reporting, NBC's Chuck Todd demanded to know, how much was Greenwald involved in the plot? What was his role? Did he have a role between simply being a receiver of this information? Is he going to have to answer these questions? And David Sirota says, why didn't Chuck Todd ask that same question to the Washington Post? I mean, they're just right down the street, right? You can call them up and ask them. Or the Associated Press or Bloomberg News. Is it because they're the establishment? They're not going to rock the boat. Glenn Greenwald is not the establishment. He's all about rocking the boat. If you look at the history of American journalism, take it back to the late 18th century, in particular, the presidential campaign of 1800 when John Adams ran against Thomas Jefferson. Take it back to that. Or that era. And what you will see is that the newspapers were out of control. Well, no, not really. Actually, President Jefferson said, I'm paraphrasing from memory here, so this is just a close quote, but were I given the choice between newspapers without a country or a country with, between a country without newspapers or newspapers without a country, I would surely choose the latter. And he was one of the people who was most ripped apart by the newspapers. So I would say that if you look at the whole history of American journalism, Glenn Greenwald is more the norm than David Gregory. It's only in the last couple of decades that we've had concentrated monopoly news. And that our news has been, it's only really since 87 and arguably since 96 that our news has been, 87 being when Reagan stopped enforcing the Fairness Doctrine, and 96 being when Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act and privatized the airwaves. You could say that only since then have we had infotainment instead of news. And we've had TV news stars like David Gregory instead of reporters. I by the way, I get it that saying things like this is not going to get me invited to any Washington, D.C. cocktail parties. Gave up on that a long time ago. Okay, some of your thoughts on this. Ray in Arkansas City, Kansas. Hey, Ray, what's up?
Hello, Mr. Hartman. How are you, sir?
I am great.
I think Snowden, I had a security clearance in the Army when I was there, and I believe that Snowden is a patriotic person. I think his actions are good for Americans. But with regards to patriotism, you know, for a lifetime, I have purchased American-made products to the point I've refused to operate a foreign car. But when you bring it, when you speak about illegal aliens and amnesty, this is a terrible. It would be a terrible decision to give amnesty. But I speak from terms of patriotism.
Well, don't you have immigrants in your family?
Pardon?
I'm assuming you're not Native American, so your family is a family of immigrants at some point in time.
But sir, I had no choice to be born in this country.
Right.
I served overseas, and I know countries like Germany do not accept immigrants very readily.
Sure.
Because I looked into it in the early 80s when I served.
No, I know that, too. I've had to get work permits in both Germany and Australia. It's a challenge.
But Americans are first, sir, and jobs are very few in this country.
Yes.
And as I said, my history will demonstrate that it is patriotic.
Yeah. Okay. I got it. And you know, I don't totally disagree with you. In a bad job market, adding millions of people to the labor force rapidly could arguably be a bad thing. I would say that, you know, since Reagan granted amnesty in 86 to 5 million people and stopped prosecuting employers, that illegal employer problem that we've had for, you know, ever since Reaganomics was imposed upon us has, you know, created this situation. And, you know, we really need to put that causality where it belongs to be. But, you know, I get that, Ray. On the other hand, you've got a lot of kids who are born in this country or who were born before they came to this country, but they were not of the age of consent when they came to this country, who didn't choose to be here, just like you didn't choose to be here or not to be here. And, you know, the Dreamers have much more sympathy. You know, I have much more sympathy for them. But also, I mean, this immigration bill, this is 13 years to become a citizen. And for those 13 years, you can't not work for more than 6 weeks. So it's like kind of bonded servitude. It reminds me of the late 1700s, early 1800s, when Europeans came to this country on debentures, on you know, debts, and they were basically bonded servants. So I get your point, but I think that we can do this. What we really need to do is bring the jobs back home, and that involves reversing 32 years of Reaganomics and the free trade insanity associated with it. The whole libertarian idea that there should be no national borders and, you know, labor should be, you know, and corporations should be able to seek labor wherever they want. That's crazy.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Back with your thoughts on, and mine, and more of mine, on Edward Snowden, patriot or goat, after this. Slightly unbalanced. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you. And just to recap, and then we'll pick your calls back up again. I'm wondering if Edward Snowden is like, you know, one of the last people who really believes themselves to be a patriot, who at least is under the age of 40. Because anybody under the age of 40 has grown up in a world. Do you have that Reagan clip of Reagan saying government? Yeah. We should. For
in
those
this
of you,
present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
And the crisis that he was talking about was high unemployment, high inflation, and you know he had unemployment of you know over 8%, and I think it might have even gone over 9%. But I know it was over. In any case, this. So government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem. America is not the solution to our problems. America is the problem. I mean, that is the extrapolation from it. The message that the billionaires, the Koch brothers, the billionaires on Wall Street, the uber rich, even a few, I mean, apparently the guy who started Facebook, some of these other guys, you know, they're funding some of these right-wing causes. The hip new billionaire libertarians. The message of the billionaires is government is no good. Only the market is any good. Of course, the market is what they have used to become billionaires. Without acknowledging that markets don't exist without governments. Governments provide money and courts and infrastructure. All this other stuff that allows billionaires to become billionaires. But they don't want you to know that. So anyhow, I'm wondering what kind of damage has been done to this country. I mean, the damage that has been done to us economically by 32 years of Reaganomics is obvious. What kind of damage has been done to us in terms of our own notions of patriotism? Of I love my country enough to die for it. About the only time you hear right-wingers putting that phrase out, by the way, seems to be at like country western festivals where they're encouraging people to join the military. It's never, oh yeah, you know, be patriotic, go out and investigate whether your congressman is on the take. No. Or, oh, yeah, be patriotic. Go out and see if corporations are buying off your member of Congress. No. It's, yeah, be patriotic. Join the military. As if that's the only way to define a person's patriotism. It's kind of, you know, Sean Hannity world. Although I don't think that he, well, I don't know. I can't speak to it. In any case, what do you think? John in Chicago, listening to WCPT. Hey, John.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing today?
Just great. Patriotism?
You know, great. Going to get better.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, I do see patriotism waning. And it really did start with Reagan. He said you can't trust the government, and he and most of the people after him made sure that we couldn't trust our government. He made sure that they really were the problem. Take a look at what happened with Bush and with the Patriot Act.
Right.
Everybody just went along with it, eyes wide open, looking at nothing,
right,
and deciding that, oh, sure, this is a good thing for the country. Now here we are under President Obama, and people are taking a second look at it and going, hey, what the heck did we say okay to?
Right.
This is not the way our country is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely one of the big reasons I see it coming down.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it's an excellent point, because the other thing that I didn't mention, the other piece of it, is that when Republicans are out of power, they trash the government. They say it's no good, you know, we shouldn't have it. And, of course, their alternative is turn everything over to the billionaires. And then when they're in the government, they throw monkey wrenches into the government. They put people like Brownie in charge of FEMA. They put people like James Watt in charge of the Interior Department. And, you know, they put incompetent or corrupt individuals in charge of government, or they defund government agencies to the point that they can't appropriately do their jobs, cut back on education funding, cut back on money to the schools, trash unionized teachers, go on jihads against these people, and then, trash government employees, bureaucrats, and not that there's, you know, corporate America isn't full of bureaucrats. Come on, give me a break. And then the result of that is that people go, oh, yeah, government's bad, and government is America, so America must be bad.
Well,
and
for the most part, I've never seen people do a better job than government employees. Look at the post office. These people have been overworked for decades.
Yeah.
And now they're getting the short end, and they've always done a great job.
Yeah, and the people in our military, by and large, have always done a great job. And,
absolutely,
you know, tragically, too much of their work has been outsourced. And,
yeah,
it, you know,
are their benefits.
The Social Security Administration has never missed a check. You know, they've never had a check bounce. I'm sure that they've had a few errors, but they've never had a, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, our government has done a pretty good job. And by the way, the same people who say that they hate the government, they don't trust it, are the same people who say that they want the government to execute people. So they trust the government to have life and death power, but not so much with the post office. Excellent point, John. Thanks a lot for calling. Aggie in Oakland, California. Hey, Aggie.
Hey, Tom. Hi.
Hey.
I'm here because I saw you on Twitter here, and you were talking about the whistleblower versus leaker.
Mm-hmm.
And from somewhere, and I'm not sure, I hate when I don't document what I've heard, but it was either on Twitter or somewhere, they were saying, yeah, there's actually a memo that went out to major mainstream media to say the word leaker rather than whistleblower. Quit
really?
Using the term whistleblower and use that term leaker because, you know, that makes the story more, I don't know what it does.
Well, I thought it was fascinating this morning. I'm going to, let me just hit the Financial Times website right now and see if, yeah, here, I'm on the homepage of Financial Times, headline, U.S.-China relations at risk over Snowden, blistering criticism over decision to let whistleblower leave Hong Kong. The big question, whistleblowers in Ecuador. These are headlines on the front page of the Financial Times today. Whistleblower found Hong Kong no haven. On the other hand, if you hit the Washington Post or the New York Times, you will find the word leaker used instead of the word whistleblower. So, Aggie, I think you're right. You know, if the memo didn't go out, certainly the meme went out, and the effect is the same. Thanks for the call. Dan in Centerville, Iowa. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Tom. First-time caller. Thanks for your show.
Sure. Thank you.
I have a legal question. Since the Supreme Court ruling of corporations are now people, is it not possible for these individuals to spy on us?
Yeah. In other words, why are we hiring corporations to spy on us?
Why are they allowed to keep this data?
Yeah.
They're giving over, turning over to the NSA. I think we should be focusing on the telecom corporations and not the NSA.
Well, I've been saying that for a long time. I don't have any problem with spies. I want my country to have spies. I mean, spies have a long history of having value. Jehoshaphat, you know, if his spies hadn't come and told him what was going on, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You got to have spies. I'm all in favor of having spies. I would just rather that they weren't working, that the spies were not working for a corporation that was owned by the Carlyle Group. And, it's the privatization of our spying that concerns me. I'm with you, Dan. Well said. Thank you. Terry in Pahrump, Nevada. Hey, Terry, what's up?
This is absolutely perfect. It's a debate that is near and dear to me. I don't see patriotism waning. I believe the far right is extremely patriotic. It's just, what are they patriotic to? I believe that most Americans know so little about our founding fathers and so little about what it says in the Constitution that what they're patriotic to is something they've been sold. They're patriotic to John Wayne movies and Leave It to Beaver, a world that never really existed. And I'd like to give two perfect examples, and your first caller is a great example. He questioned the immigration policies. Our Declaration of Independence is a political manifesto.
Sure.
And we learned sophomore class in English in high school that when you write a political manifesto, you start with the most important things first and go in descending order. Our Declaration of Independence actually complained about England limiting immigration before they complained about taxation without representation.
Oh, that's interesting.
I also believe that since the first and most important thing written in the Declaration of Independence is all men are created equal, that if you do not believe that all men are created equal, if you are a racist, if you ever give out racial epithets or talk in those manners, you're actually not a patriot, because everything that we believe is predicated on that single most important thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's not just that they've been sold the John Wayne Leave It to Beaver thing. I think that they've also been sold the idea that somehow America is wonderful because we allow these giant corporations and billionaires to exist. And that's, you know, we are a marketplace, and that's the wonder of our country, is that we have a so-called free market. The government should not be involved in food stamps. Just let charity take care of it. The rich people will feed people. Don't worry. It didn't work out so well during the Great Depression. People actually starved. But nonetheless, Terry, excellent point. Very well said. Thank you. Yeah, it's a different kind of patriotism. I would go beyond that, in fact. I think a lot of people who show up for Tea Party events are very patriotic. Now, again, the demographic for people in the Tea Party is 50+. So these are people who remember when America was the brand. But I think they've been sold a bill of goods.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Because it's not principally the land of the free and the home of the brave that they're being sold. It's the land of the corporate serf and the home of the fearful. 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We will do a Berlusconi alert for you later on in the day, but there's a good one coming. We will get to that. Paul in Lucerne, California. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Tom? You asked about patriotism earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I think the casualty when America replaced greed, replaced integrity with greed.
Yep.
Patriotism died.
Yeah, and that was Reagan's 80s.
I was alive then.
Yeah.
I was coming out of high school then. I was looking forward to a really killer America, and it died right before my very eyes.
Yep. And that's the thing that I think those of us who are over 40 who had an opportunity to see this radical change. I mean, the Reagan Revolution was genuinely a revolution. The changes were genuinely revolutionary, and they're still happening. And those of us who are over 40 have an obligation to tell people who are under 40, let me tell you what America used to be like. because it used to be a very different place. It used to be, you know, you knew the people you worked for. America was a business, it was a nation of relatively small and medium-sized businesses. Even the CEOs of the biggest companies in America only made 30, 40 times what their employees made. And that's a hell of a lot, by the way. I mean, making twice what your employees make is a hell of a lot. And but making, you know, or one and a half to whatever. But it's insane. I mean, what has happened in this country? You would look at it. And I think that we need to be sharing the word. Paul, thank you. You said it so well. Greg in Carpentera, California. Am I saying that right?
That's right. Yes.
Great. What's up?
Hello.
You're on the air.
You know, you said something a little while ago, falls in line with what I've been thinking, is that this whole Snowden thing is looking like a creative script or a spy novel or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this is way out there. I understand it for your show maybe, but the people who brought down the towers have never been investigated and never brought in.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be a fantastic setup for another 9/11. I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
He's out there jeopardizing, you know, our national security, and they could say that's why we got hit again.
Yeah, that would be the end of investigative journalism. It would be the death of the Fourth Amendment. It would be, you know, perhaps even with Obama as president, certainly if we had a Republican as president, we would be very seriously doomed. And, yeah, excellent point, Greg. Thanks for calling, I think, and making it. I mean, it's like, whoa. Tina in Jay, New York. Hey, Tina.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What's on your mind?
I'm so glad your last caller said what he said, because that thought has crossed my mind as well. Mm-hmm. Along the lines of, they found, you know, Mohammed Atta's passport or whatever among the wreckage in Washington. Like, wow, really?
Right.
But I was wanting to say that, let's say everything is as it appears, so this big fat NSA agency can't find Snowden. So something's obviously wrong, no matter how you slice it. They can't find him. They
right.
didn't find the man that bought combat ammo gear to shoot up the theater in Colorado, the big NSA agency, spying on us all, missed him on purpose, by accident, I don't know. And now they can't find Snowden. So at the very least, the system's not working.
Yeah, Andy Borowitz today in his column at andyborowitz.com, it's all about how the NSA, they sent Alexander, General Alexander out to let us all know that the reason that they were unable to catch one guy in their midst who was, like, you know, downloading stuff to thumb drives was because they were too busy spying on 300 million average Americans. And, you know, sorry, but we had to do, you know, our job, and so we really couldn't look at our own people. Excellent point, Tina. Thank you. Ken in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hey, Ken, when did patriotism die?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's dead. I'd just say it's irrelevant, sir. Once 2000 happened and the American people proved themselves to be unsupportive of their own democracy.
You mean when we let the Supreme Court hand the White House to George W. Bush?
Just a handful of rich white guys decided who would be president.
Yeah.
And the American people did not stand up to this theft of their own democracy. I submit, what is the purpose of patriotism anymore when democracy simply doesn't exist?
Yeah, yeah. I understand your sentiment, Ken. I think that it is still. I think there's enough democracy left in our oligarchic constitutional monarchy that we can take it back. I think it's going to take a constitutional amendment, which is why I push movetoamend.org so hard, even though I have absolutely no affiliation with that website or the group, other than just respecting the work they're doing. I think they're the linchpin that could save this country. I think that there's enough democracy left that we might be able to pull the fat out of the fire, but I do agree that we are way down the road, farther than we should be. Ken, thanks for the call. Jerry in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, I think it's amazing the amount of scrutiny that they give Snowden and demanding that he be extradited from Russia and China to the States. And yet, still, I heard George Bush, the George Bush administration is wanted by some groups around the world to be taken to the International Court of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Yet still, you don't hear a word from our press about that.
Yes, when's Bush going to be arrested? Might he be arrested? You can pretty much guarantee that if we were talking about a Democrat, if we were talking about Lyndon Johnson, for example, if there had been a big movement, when Nixon became president on the Republican side to arrest Johnson and try him for war crimes, which was not inconceivable, that it would have been a drumbeat in today's media, certainly in Fox News and everything. Jerry, thank you for the note. Daniel in Henderson, Nevada. We just have a minute to the end of the hour. Daniel, it's yours.
Hey, Tom, thank you for having me. I love your show. I think you're awesome. You keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
On the topic of the pinhead or patriot type deal, mm-hmm. the whistleblowers, I believe personally that Mr. Snowden is a hero. Much beyond a patriot, I think in a time like today, when so much runs rampant with corporate greed and political greed and misuse, I think that people that can actually stand up, young people that can stand up and get the information out to the masses is something that's truly heroic. Yeah. I wish there were more of them, and I think more will come out.
Well, and that's the other thing is, you know, by if our government can squash Snowden like a bug, then more may not show up. And if they don't, on the other hand, it might be opening the floodgates, which makes a lot of people nervous. But I'm with Thomas Jefferson. I think that unstable times are healthy for countries within a certain boundary. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And boy, there's a lot going on in the world. You've got, kind of a meltdown going on right now in Turkey. There are protests in the streets in Brazil. The stock market has been on a roller coaster ever since Bernanke said, maybe we're going to take away the heroin. And or maybe that's not the correct characterization of it. So let's turn to one of the smartest people I know, certainly one of the finest economists, I think, in the world, Dr. Richard Wolff, professor of economics emeritus at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, author of numerous books, including Democracy at Work and democracyatwork.info, and, of course, his website, rdwolff, with two Fs, .com. Dr. Wolff, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Great to have you with us. Let's start with the economy, if you don't mind, and the stock market and the Fed and all this stuff. If it's true that 30-40% of our GDP or our economy is now financialized, is now financial products, and that those have some kind of close tie to the Fed, isn't that like a sign that our economy has been hollowed out? And I mean, shouldn't we take any wobbling of things as a consequence of anything the Fed does as a problem? FDR didn't rely on the Fed. He went to Congress and said, give me money, I'll hire people. They gave him money, he hired people.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that so many negatives besiege the American economy today. So many pressures to keep this crisis going, the one that started in late 2007 and here 5.5 years later is still with us, that the Fed has been in the peculiar position of being one of the very few parts of the apparatus of government that has actually tried to sustain the economy, to push forward against all of the backward problems, whether that be the continuing high unemployment, the continuing foreclosure of homes, the terrible economic crisis in Europe that is, after all, our largest trading partner, the slowing of growth in China. I could go on. That we have come to rely in a very dangerous way on what the Fed has been doing for the last 4 or 5 years. And basically what the Fed has been doing is pouring money into the economy. And I mean pouring huge, unprecedented historical creation of money, pouring it into the economy, pressing down interest rates to near zero, trying to get people and businesses to borrow more money, to have more money in their pocket. Now, it hasn't worked in the sense it hasn't stopped the crisis, but it has so much money sloshing around in the hands of banks, insurance companies, and rich people, that they have been on a speculative boom. They've boosted the stock market. There were people who mistakenly thought a booming stock market could offset or counteract a vast mass of the population in economic trouble. They now see that that's wrong. But in the end, the Fed was, by pumping up the money, keeping the thing from a massive meltdown. And so when Bernanke last week in his press conference suggested that they might, and to use the language that has become popular now, taper down the flood of money creation, it freaked out the people at the top who know very well that the stock prices of the stock market and their profits are more dependent on the Fed and its easy money policy, or if you like, its quantitative easing policy, than at any time in our history. So they panicked last Thursday, and you could see the results, and no one knows where that's going now.
Mm. Yeah. And I've just figured they're just going to keep, you know, blowing up the bubble until at least the 2016 elections. I mean, it seemed like in 2008 that they were, you know, the Bush thought he could just keep blowing this thing up until 2008, and he mistimed that. But
yeah, I think that's a very important point. There's a temptation, both on the part of the mass media and on the part of these governmental officials, to put forward a face, we have it under control, we're managing it, we know what we're doing and what the effect of our efforts will be. And the public should understand that that is simply not true. This Federal Reserve and the government of George Bush at the time did not understand we were heading into this crisis. I will remind you that the leaders of these institutions then told us that we didn't need to worry about any that anymore. We'd learned the lessons of the Great Depression. Right. That's clearly false. Then they told us it would be short, a kind of a subprime mortgage event that wouldn't be a big problem. That was wrong. Then they told us it wouldn't last really into the many years. That's already wrong. So keep in mind that when they tell you that building these bubbles is something they have under control, or that the vast amount of money that they've poured in will not end up boosting prices and giving us an inflation of the sort we've never seen in this country, that these are just people wishing that these things were true, but they don't have it under control today any more than they did before this crisis hit and while this crisis has been continuing.
In the 3 minutes we have left, I'm curious your thoughts on Turkey, Brazil, and the Chinese economy, if it's possible to squeeze them into that.
Yes, I think they are all connected in the following way. In Turkey, you have an accumulation of grievances of people over a whole host of issues, whether it's the government mowing down city parks for malls and mosques, or whether it is the repression of their labor movement, which is an old problem, or whether it is the global crisis, which is now, after a few years of hiatus, hitting the Turkish economy. And then the same can be said for Brazil. You're basically seeing people who haven't stood up beginning to realize, whether they look at Occupy Wall Street, which they know about, or they look at the Arab Spring, or they look at the Europeans that are in the streets for general strikes every third week, that they better get moving and acting, because otherwise they're in for a long, difficult downturn. And I think that's what's happened in Brazil. I think it's what's happened in Turkey. China's a little bit different. China is at the end of a long period of boosting their central bank with lots of money flowing into the economy and so on. And so they're discovering that they can't continue to be the global leader of economic development if the rest of the world is in deep trouble. And so they're being hampered by the fact that the Europeans can't buy those Chinese goods the way they used to. Americans the same. The Chinese economy is slowing. When they slow, it impacts back on Europe and the United States. And once again, we're forced to understand that we have a world system, a capitalist system, whose parts depend on each other, and that so much of it is not working well that none of us is safe so long as this system goes on unquestioned, unchallenged, and unchanged.
Do you think that's why the Chinese are moving people off rural land and into cities, or even building cities for them, and why the Russians just announced a massive multi-billion-dollar program to build infrastructure?
Yeah, I think they're desperate. And I think that the idea is that they're having massive movements of people from the countryside, which is not viable for them anymore, into the cities. And they're terrified of the social problem. What do you do with masses of people moving to the cities in hopes of a better life when you don't have the jobs for them to have that better life? You better create them somehow, or else you're going to have an unmanageable social explosion. And there again, Turkey and Brazil give them a very clear idea of where they may be heading if they don't come up with a solution. But it's not clear that they can by themselves do it. And that's the rub of a system that isn't working, that even the parts that can escape for a while discover sooner or later that they live on this planet and depend on it.
Remarkable. So well said. Dr. Richard Wolff, R.D. Wolff, with two Fs, WOLFF.com, the website. Dr. Wolff, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Tom, for the opportunity.
It is always an honor and pleasure to have you on our program. We will be back 15 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And you can get information on Dr. Wolff's book at democracyatwork.info, I-N-F-O. 15 minutes past. 20 minutes past the hour. President Obama making his first extended trip to Africa. Next week he's going to be flying over to that continent, several countries on that continent. And one of those countries is not Kenya. He's not visiting Kenya. So Yahoo News writes a piece, to their credit, they quickly corrected it, but it's like, this is a great example of the old, if you throw enough stuff against the wall, some of it sticks no matter what. Fox News and the Republicans and the hate mongers have been throwing this, Obama's not an American, he was born in Kenya, stuff at the wall for years and years and years. Just like they say, oh, you know, and the IRS thing was a scandal. No, it wasn't. It was a conservative Republican who did it. And whatever it was, actually, it looks like the guy was just doing his job and probably appropriately. And, Benghazi was, it turns out, no, there was no there either. I mean, you know, mistakes happen. But the number of people in the State Department who have died or the number of embassies that have been attacked and people have died in under this president is lower than many previous presidents, particularly Reagan. But in any case, enough stuff had been thrown at the wall that Rachel Rose Hartman, no relation, apparently didn't catch it because she wrote for Yahoo News the lead sentence, spelled L-E-D-E, by the way. President Barack Obama makes the first extended trip to Africa of his presidency next week, but he won't be stopping in the country of his birth. Period. Right. I would love to know the story behind the story on that. You know? So. Anyway. Anthony in Chesterland, Ohio. It says you disagree with me, so you go to the top of the list. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I spoke to you a couple months ago. I'm a libertarian member of the Libertarian Party. You're respectful, so I want to thank you for that up front. You mentioned Reagan. Just to clarify, he's no libertarian.
No, but he moved us closer to the direction of libertarianism, which is feudalism. It's corporate control than any president has in recent memory.
He didn't cut a department. Military spending was way up, which is hardly a libertarian creed. Federal Register did not get smaller, and most importantly, spending went up. So he's talked a good game, but did not move the country in a libertarian direction. I don't blame him. The country, you know, is at this point not ready to accept the libertarian philosophy. So, you know, I guess in one sense I could say he did what he could, which wasn't much.
Now, Anthony, can you point to any country anywhere in the world or any time in history in any country anywhere in the world where libertarian ideas have been put to the test and demonstrated to succeed?
Well, how about this one? How about this country? You know, this.
We are not libertarian. We've never been libertarian.
However, no country has been more based on a free market approach to the production of goods and services than this country has.
That's not true.
This is this is a typically a tactic used by
we had protective tariffs of over 30% from the George Washington administration to the Reagan administration. Which is very much not a free market. You've had, you know, regulation government support of private industries. That was Hamilton's plan in 1793. The Washington administration was, you know, pouring money into new technologies and new companies.
Well,
you had the railroads across the United States. They were basically given to the railroad companies by Abraham Lincoln.
The railroads that were built using government subsidies were bankruptcies. The ones that were not actually succeeded.
No, that's not true. Jay Gould took in today's money would be over $100 billion in free land from the federal government and died one of the richest men in America. He owned the biggest railroad in America.
Well, no libertarian would support taking taxpayer money and giving it to a rich person.
But that's my point. We've never been a libertarian country. There is no time in the history of America that we have practiced libertarianism. It's never been demonstrated to work anywhere, including here.
Bear in mind, I'm talking relative to other countries, okay? So that's
well, I would say if you want to say, you know, if you want to look at countries that are highly libertarian, I would say, you know, look at probably most of Libya except for Tripoli. You know, there's not a lot of government involvement in the average life of people.
Well, I would disagree. They just, the dictator just got taken out of office there, right?
Well, he was, you know, he had basically control of Tripoli, but most of Libya is fairly rural, and it was just people doing what they're doing, so you could say that was semi-libertarian, but, you know, even...
One point I'd like to bring up, what you do here, because I do listen to you regularly, one point I'd like to bring up with regard to profit and pricing is... If you go, and I implore you, or I implore any of your listeners, to go to any Libertarian Party meeting, and this is not me just trying to try to get new members, but ask them what they think of corporations. I guarantee you, you're going to be surprised by the response.
Oh, what you're
going to
hear is a lot of these big corporations are feeding government, and government is feeding them in a
absolutely
big trough frenzy,
correct.
And it's not a good thing. But if you get government out of the equation, and it's just the corporations, then you've got the libertarian paradise, and that sounds to me like feudalism.
No, it wouldn't be correct, because feudalism had a government component to it.
Not really.
I would say
not really. Go back. I'm serious. Read the history of feudal Europe. The government had very little power. The core central government, the King of England, had very little power during the feudal times. It was the local land barons. It was the local landowners who, in many cases, didn't even hold political office, but they owned the land, and they owned the serfs on the land, the people on the land, and they owned everything.
Okay, but no libertarian would be for the ownership of one person by another.
So you'd say feudalism without explicit ownership of the people, but because you can pay the people anything you want, and you can have a fairly loose labor market because there's lots of people, because you're going to throw the borders open, right? Completely throw the borders open and bring in a billion people to compete with American workers. So you can drive wages down to 20 cents an hour. So you've got people who are so desperate and so poor that they're functionally serfs.
Well, the way we look at profit is that it's just a signal. Okay, in other words, we don't put in a moral component to it. What we do is...
But see, that's not how business people look at it. Business people look at profit as the thing to get. You know, they devote their efforts to it. If you're going to turn our country and our economy over to business people, you got to realize everything is going to be done for profit, and nothing's going to be done for the rest of us. Anthony, call again. We'll continue this conversation. I shouldn't have left with the last word in my mouth. I'm sorry.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
But then there's that machine that starts at 28 minutes after the hour. Just steps on me. We'll be right back. Talk media for the rest of us. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 34 minutes past the hour. John in Edenton, North Carolina, is that right?
Edenton.
Okay. How you doing, John? What's up?
I'm doing well. Hey, Tom, I was listening to the last interview, and I got to tell you, I've been trying to figure out, listen to the news around in the U.S. to see what they say about the... what's going on in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely, I mean, no, people are not saying anything around here. I don't think they even have an idea what's going on in there and why.
Are you Brazilian?
It was fused in, or it started with this bus fare that the government raised by 20 cents.
Right.
That's what started.
Yeah.
But the people have been sucking in, and the people are very, very unhappy with the government, and mostly it's because the corruption that is completely, you know, ridiculous what's going on in there as far as corruption and government welfare.
Well, one man, yes, no, no, John, that's not the case. And one man's corruption is another man's. George Bush gets, you know, $14 million out of the Texas Rangers. Yes, it started out with an increase in bus fare. Brazil has been a center left government. Lula before, and now what's her name?
Duma.
Yeah, Duma, thank you. And they have massively expanded the number of people who can go to school. And even at very, very low cost or for free, not just primary schools, but college as well, or secondary schools, but colleges as well. They've expanded health care. They've expanded housing. They've reduced poverty incredibly. I mean, I don't remember the numbers right now. We had a guest on last week who was going through them and just, you know, ticking them right off. But some incredible, you know, double digit, like 20-30% cut in poverty over like a decade or two. Just very, very successful social programs. And social welfare programs, and a left government. And when that government started going right, when that government started backing off, number one, and number two, when that government said, hey, now that we're a big shot, we're the head of the BRIC countries, right? I mean, it's Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Here we are. It's Brazil. Oh, so let's host the World Cup, and let's host the Olympic Games. And by the way, we're going to take 10 or 20 or 30 billion dollars and we're going to build stadiums and villages and we're going to tear down places. And the people said, wait a minute, use that money to pay for another, you know, 5 or 10 million kids to go to college. Use that money to pay to expand health care systems. Use that money for more housing assistance. Be more leftist. So you have a center left country that has been moving in a left direction for a decade and a half, almost 2 decades, or arguably 3 decades. And the people are saying, no, we want more of that, please. And that's why the president of the country came out and said, I'm with the protesters. They are right. We should be doing more of this kind of thing. Now, in Turkey, it's a very different thing. You got Erdogan there, and he's basically in the bag with the big corporations. And they're saying he's got developers, you know, he's feathering his own nest. He's got developers. Well, you could argue, actually, that something similar to this, if you want to call this corruption, might be happening in Brazil with the World Cup and with the stadiums and things that are going to be built for the Olympics. But you've got these developers in Turkey who are saying, you know, give us the city parks, give us the public property, and we will build high rises and we will make money and, you know, everything will be wonderful. And when he started giving away the public parks to build these big, you know, office buildings, the people said, no, we want our parks. We want our public spaces. So again, Erdogan was going right and the people are saying, no, we want commons. We want left. And that's why they're out. That's why they're out in the streets. And that's why it started, you know, in Turkey, it started out as all about parks. In Brazil, it started out as all about you know, raising subsidized bus fares, public transportation, but they're essentially,
it just culminated with the complete for many years the population has not been satisfied with the level of corruption. I mean, you know, if you allow me to say, people they have a proposition in the Congress going on right now that prohibits the judiciary to investigate the legislative.
Right.
And they, you know, they're gonna pass it. They're absolute majority to pass it. So basically, the state judiciary cannot investigate any corruption, anybody in the judiciary.
Yeah, I doubt, John. I don't know the details of that, but I won't argue it with you. Other than to say that I doubt that the average person in the streets is pointing to that. Although it may well be. I think that they're more concerned that by corruption, what they're talking about. Keep in mind, you've got a very, very loud, corporate-owned, billionaire-owned right-wing press in Brazil. And they do everything they can to take every little incident that happens and use it to say, oh, this is proof of government corruption, because that's the right-wing meme. If government is corrupt, let's get rid of government. Get rid of government. What have you got? More power and more money for the billionaires. More power and more money for the transnational corporations. So they're saying, oh, this is all about corruption. You talk to the average Brazilian, you talk to the Brazilians there, And they say, no, no, it's not, you know, I mean, yeah, we, of course we don't, you know, we think that, you know, some of the government people have been bought off and they're giving our money to the developers to build stadiums. And why are we doing this World Cup thing for, you know, so that rich people can sit in skyboxes and stuff like that. But, you know, all that said, it's that they want a more progressive system. And yes, they would like a more transparent system. But be careful of exaggerating the corruption piece of it. People in this country hear that and they think, you know, oh, the whole government top to bottom is rotten. That is, I don't think that the average Brazilian would tell you that.
The average Brazilian, I'm an average Brazilian, and I have many, many friends, and we're following in just like everybody else did on the uprise in Egypt and everywhere else through the social network.
Yeah.
And that's what is being said. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. It's corruption. It's corruption from the guy that greets you in the door all the way to the president.
Yeah.
People are asking for an absolute and complete government reform.
Yes.
They don't care about 20 cents bus fare. The government backed out on that.
But my understanding, John, is that what the people in Brazil want is not, and again, the way that this is characterized in the right-wing media in America and in the corporate media in America is that the Brazilian people are saying, enough of this government already, the government's too big, get rid of the government. And instead, what I'm hearing from Brazilians, I haven't heard it so far from you, but maybe it's coming, is, no, what we want is a government that actually works. A government that works for the average person, a government that elevates
exactly. And government, Tom, if you understand what's going on in there, once this government came in, they have welfare for everything. If you have a kid that is drug addict, you got the minimum wage over there is 683 reals, which is half of it is in dollars. So if you want to know in dollars, it's 2 to 1 roughly.
Right.
So it's like 300. Basically, If you have people arrested, if you're a criminal, you have over 1,000 reals in help from the government a month.
Mm-hmm.
If you have somebody that's drug addict has been in jail or whatever, you have another $1,000. So you put that whole thing together, you can get over 4,000 reals a month just in government benefit, but by not doing anything other than breaking the law and having people in jail and whatever it is. Those are the government help thing. And if you are a good guy that want to go to work and whatever it is, you're not a skilled worker, you're on a minimum wage, you make 682.
John, if you were to watch Fox News, if you were to watch Fox News for a week, you would think that that was true of the average poor person, particularly a poor person of color in the inner cities of America. That they're just trying to live off welfare. They're just, you know, it's all government corrupt, you know, corrupt government that is basically buying off voters to get votes for the Democratic Party. Beware. Do you know anybody who has been arrested for using drugs and has gotten 4,000 reals a month?
It's not 4,000. It's 1,000 per person.
Okay. Who's gotten 1,000?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody, but that's what the law is.
Yeah.
But
that's what they say, right? That's what they say in the press.
No, it's on the law. If you can find it out on your own, just ask your research team to look it up.
Okay. If somebody is a drug addict in the United States or in Brazil, I think they should be treated medically. And what that's going to mean is that for some period of time, they're probably not going to be able to work, and it is going to take some money to pay for their treatment. What's wrong with that? Isn't it a good idea to get people off drugs?
I believe it is, absolutely.
Isn't addiction a medical problem, not a criminal problem?
But they're going about the wrong way, Tom. If you just give them money, they're going to keep going. That's not the way you go. What if you just give them? It's not just drug addicts. If you're a bank robber and you get arrested, your family get 1,000 reals a month.
Yeah, it can't be that simple, John. It can't. I heard that kind of rhetoric out of Reagan about our government, and you know, talking about the welfare queen, and people would try to get somebody in their family arrested so that they could go on welfare. People, you know, ad nauseum, and it was blaming the victim stuff. You know, again, do you know somebody who's gotten arrested so that they can get money and they're living better than when before they were arrested?
There are the.
Do you know anybody like that?
Tom, in Brazil, the level of violence, I don't think it's news to you, right? You know the level of violence in Brazil. There is no guns. The normal citizen cannot go to Walmart and get guns.
Right.
You can even buy a BB gun.
Right.
Okay? You can't have it. But you get assaulted, you get robbed at daylight at the city.
I understand, but that's not unique to Brazil. I mean, I had bombs go off around me in both Bogota, Colombia, and Lima, Peru back in the day, as well as being stalked in Bogota. But John, thank you for the call. I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
By better answer, I mean a more well-informed detail and data on the micro-arguments that are being made by the right down there. Let's check in with Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, TalkRadioNews.com, on the news of the day. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Well, besides Rusty the missing red panda...
Oh, my. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. This is in Washington, D.C.
Huge.
Government finally did something right, though. They found Rusty.
They found Rusty. This is the biggest story in Washington, D.C. today.
Mm-hmm.
This has overtaken Edward Snowden on Twitter. It's ridiculous. This is a missing red panda from the National Zoo that caused Washington to come together and find Rusty. Through a tweeted picture in Adams Morgan neighborhood, and they went and they caught him with a net, and crated and captured was the tweet. And
He's back. Okay, life is good.
Good,
so what else? What is going on that would concern the rest of America today?
Concerning the rest of America, I was at the White House briefing today, and Jay Carney offered a blistering statement today against Hong Kong and China and Russia, just about anybody else who might be thinking of harboring fugitive Edward Snowden, the NSA leaker, basically saying that Hong Kong's decision to allow Snowden to board a flight to Russia unquestionably has a negative impact on the U.S.-China relationship. Also saying that officials in Hong Kong have plenty of time to resolve questions about the warrant for Snowden's arrest. He called the decision to let him go a deliberate choice. Also said U.S. authorities are just not buying that this was a technical decision.
Now, Victoria, a question. I'm looking at the homepage of the Financial Times right now, which I think we both agree is kind of well-respected international media based in the U.K., and fairly down the middle, except they kind of tilt toward rich people, but that's what they're doing. That's how I mean. It's the Financial Times. Here are the headlines. U.S.-China relations at risk over Snowden, blistering criticism over decision to let whistleblower leave HK. The big question, whistleblowers in Ecuador. Whistleblower found Hong Kong no haven. So they are using the word whistleblower exclusively to refer to Snowden in all of their coverage, the Financial Times.
Yes.
I look at the Washington Post. I look at the New York Times. You just used the word. I look at the American press. All I read is leaker. Whistleblowers have international protected status. Leakers don't. Why the difference?
I don't know. I've decided for myself that because I don't know which he is, I know that he leaked documents. I don't think that that it's been determined whether he is a traitor, whether he is a whistleblower, but I know that he is a leaker.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he did that.
Okay.
And so to me, that's a neutral phrase.
Oh, that's interesting. Because
he proclaimed himself a whistleblower.
No, you can, but, you know, Scooter Libby went to jail for leaking documents.
He did other things, though.
Well, I mean, or he leaked Valerie Plame's identity.
Yeah. I think that's other things. I mean,
you're doing it with a pure heart. You didn't get a memo from anybody saying, please use the word.
I've thought about this when I sit at my computer at 2:00 in the morning. I don't see it as a pejorative.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. I don't see it like Dianne Feinstein that he's a traitor.
Yes. I understand. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think that's synonymous. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy unveiled a set of proposals today designed to increase oversight of an installed safeguards against abuse in the federal government surveillance program. He's got a new bill, the FISA Accountability and Privacy Protection Act, that will do all kinds of things that he thinks will tighten up FISA, shorten the current FISA authorizations, increase the evidence threshold for obtaining records through Section 215 of the Patriot Act, that's the PRISM program, call for increased disclosure of NSA letters and FISA decisions, and order formal reviews of Section 215 and Section 702 of the FISA Amendments Act. Those are the sections
under which this is all great stuff. And by the way, this wouldn't have happened if it weren't for Edward Snowden. And number two, I wanted to, if it sounded to you like I was picking on you, I want to apologize. You are one of the most high integrity, right? You know, solid journalist people I've ever met my entire life, and I have tremendous.
No, that's fine. No, that's okay. No, I just sort of tried to figure out what is he, and I tried to be just
sure.
You know,
yeah.
I have my own views, but I tried to be
Got
clear it. About it.
Yep.
Very interesting report coming out today. It's a document rather than a report. I think it's an internal IRS document.
Mm-hmm.
But the IRS had a conference call with reporters. Danny Werfel, the new head of the IRS, did. And they have determined that the IRS's screening of groups seeking tax-exempt status was broader and lasted longer than as previously disclosed.
Oh, no. And Fox has another news cycle.
Well, yeah, but the internal IRS document that the AP got said that besides Tea Party, lists used by screeners to pick groups for close examination also included the terms Progressive, Occupy, and Israel.
Wow. Okay, so they were equal opportunity. We're looking for politics, or we're sniffing around for political activity-ers.
Looks like it. Looks like it.
Yeah, good.
Werfel said that, anyway, he's put a stop to this.
Mm.
He said that preliminary results of an examination found no indication of improper screening beyond the IRS offices. So no involvement in the IRS or involvement in these matters by anyone outside the IRS.
So is Daryl Issa going to give it up and go home?
No, Daryl Issa has already said that the review fails to meaningfully answer the largest outstanding questions, and that just that he's found no evidence that anyone at the IRS intentionally did anything wrong can only be called premature.
Well, you could say the same thing about the existence of UFOs.
Indeed.
Indeed.
coming up within the next hour, there will be a vote in the Senate on the immigration amendment to tighten border security, if they're on time. It's expected to pass handily, after which they will move on to consideration of the broader bill that they hope to have as many as 70 votes for.
I wonder to what extent this is viewed as a welfare bill for Arizona and Texas. I mean, they're going to end up with billions of dollars.
Yes.
It's going to rebuild the economies of these two red states.
Yeah.
Anyhow, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Debbie Hines is back with us, trial lawyer, former prosecutor, legal political commentator over at LegalSpeaks.com. Debbie, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Tom. Can you hear me okay?
I hear you just fine.
Great.
So, knock, knock.
Who's there? Wasn't that incredibly just bad joke today?
Oh, that was, I heard so much about it, I finally, you know, had to look up the video and just watch this, tell our listeners about what happened in the court. This is the Trayvon Martin, the trial of George Zimmer for the murder of Trayvon Martin.
Right, so the defense started off, as I thought they should, with their opening when they said this is a sad case for everyone, for both sides, which is true. And so after going into how sad the case is, he then proceeds to go into a joke. He says, I want to tell you a joke. I know you shouldn't tell jokes. And I'm saying, oh, I don't think you should either. And he goes into, knock, knock, who's there? George Zimmerman. And I can't repeat the rest of it because I didn't even get the joke.
Oh, here's the joke. What he was doing is he was making a joke about how uninformed and therefore implicitly either dumb or not uninterested in news, one had to be a juror on the Trayvon Martin case, because he said, knock, knock, who's there? George Zimmerman. George Zimmerman who? Ah, you're eligible for the jury.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's what he said. He said, but I'm a person, and that's why I said, oh, my God, you never give jokes in any kind of openings or closing, because everyone's humor is different, and I didn't get the joke, and I was online with other people, and they didn't get it either.
Yeah, and I don't think the jurors got it either, and if they did get it, I think they would have been insulted.
It would have been, yes, and it's offensive. It was offensive.
Yeah. So
and you people are really dumb to be on this jury.
Yeah, that's essentially what he was saying, and I don't think that you win points that way. I mean, what this is supposed to be like, you know, a high-powered defense attorney?
I questioned that after I heard his opening. I mean, it was just incredibly. He got one good point in, and it was excellent. But he spoke for well over 2 hours. I mean, they had to take a break in the middle, which you also never want to have happen. In the middle of your opening statement, you generally just want to go with it until you can finish. And it was just incredibly, it was incredibly long. It was tedious. It was painstakingly tedious, and it was boring. But I'm not, and he was very old school because, you know, we're using PowerPoint presentations now, and he was basically using, you know, the old chalkboard.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. So is the, I mean, the conventional wisdom about this, Debbie, is that the prosecutor, by starting out with a couple of obscenities and then, you know, which were shocking. In fact, MSNBC carried them live on television. And then Chuck Todd had to break in and say, sorry about that. We're putting a 7-second delay in.
Everyone did. Yeah.
Yeah. But they were the words that George Zimmerman had said into the phone as he was chasing Trayvon Martin. And, you know, very derogatory comments about, apparently, about what he thought of young black men.
Right. And that, yeah. And it shows that it diffuses everything that the Zimmerman side wants to get in about how nice George really is. And he really is kind and compassionate to people. And he wasn't kind and compassionate when he first made the call.
Right.
To 911. Those were the first words he said, you know, when he made the call.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was a great, great way for the prosecution to start. I mean, you know, it really got their sensitivities up, but it really showed, you know, what they had to show about George Zimmerman on that night. And that's all that matters is what he was on that night.
Right. Right, because that was the night that it all happened. I mean, he might be a really sweet guy now, but it doesn't matter.
I mean, he's the nicest person in the world, but on that night, they have to show that he murdered with malice, you know, Trayvon Martin.
Yeah, yeah. And did so, yeah, exactly, with malice for the worst of reasons.
With deprived mind, which is, you know, they've got to show some, you know, some evilness there, for lack of a better word. I mean, they just can't show it was a mistake, it was an accident. That just doesn't fly.
Right, right. What's your, you know, I didn't watch the whole opening statements by either side. I just saw the cliff notes. Basically, I saw the knock knock joke and I saw the obscenities.
Yeah, you were lucky you missed the one on the defense side.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering, did he construct? I mean, it seems like what it's going to come down to is if people believe that Trayvon attacked George Zimmerman and George Zimmerman was, you know, laying on the ground and had to shoot Trayvon Martin.
Right.
Or whether it was the other way around. And
it's that was the point out of two. He could have condensed his whole 2.5 hour opening down to a very short thing, because the point that he got across that was very effective for the jurors is almost at the end of it. He said that Tracy Martin, who is Trayvon's dad, when he heard the 911 call in the background with the screams in the background of the call, he said that was not his son's voice. And that was, you know, that was powerful.
Yeah.
And that's what it basically boils down to: who's screaming, who is attacking who.
Right. So if the scenario that the jurors buy is that, I mean, is the defense characterizing Trayvon as a guy who maliciously was attacking George, or who had been attacked by George Zimmerman, Or, you know, George Zimmerman had gotten like way too close and Trayvon felt threatened and therefore he lashed out at them. Therefore he attacked him, which provoked George to shoot in self-defense. Is that
right? He wasn't the way he, constructed the way West constructed his, opening statement. He didn't really lay it out exactly like that. I mean, he basically is trying to construct it very, on a very technical, methodical basis based on what the 911 calls show that were from the neighbors. And so he's trying to present a timeline on what each neighbor that called 911 as to what they saw at what particular time, and then trying to bring in some technical expert evidence to bolster what they said. So a lot of things came out in the media, but it's not quite, you know, before the trial, it's not quite clear which way they're going to go, because they're, you know, they have a tough road, because, you know, George Zimmerman gave some interviews, and he also gave some statements to the police before he lawyered up, and they're inconsistencies. Yeah. So it's really not quite clear if it's which one he's going with, is what I'm trying to say.
So really, even though the defense laid out their opening statement, you are not sure what the defense is going to be?
No, I'm sure that the defense is going to be that which they've already have said, which is what he said in opening, that when that night Trayvon Martin was bashing George Zimmerman's head in the ground on a slab of cement, and he did say, and on that night, that cement was a deadly weapon. And he was in fear of his life, and that's how he ended up shooting him. And that Trayvon Martin was straddling over him, you know, leg over body, and beating his head up against the cement. His head that he got superficial abrasions.
And therefore, under the stand your ground law, George Zimmerman was justified, or therefore under any criminal law, he was justified?
Well, understand your ground. They have problems with stand your ground, Tom. And the reason is because even a couple of the former senators that authored the stand your ground law in 2005, they went on record a year ago saying that stand your ground doesn't apply when you're the one who's provoking the incident. It doesn't mean that you have to be the one that started the fight, but you're the one that's following. You're the one that's putting everything in motion.
Right.
And so technically, and the judge will instruct them at the conclusion of the trial, but technically stand your ground really shouldn't apply when you're the one in pursuit. It's not meant to be for you in pursuit. It's meant to be if I'm attacked right now and I feel that I'm in great fear of dying, or I'm in great risk of having imminent risk of body harm, I can use deadly force. I don't have to try to back off and retreat.
Right.
So I think that's why the whole concept is going around the pursuit, that he was actually to follow.
Okay. I'm sorry, Debbie, but we got to wrap it up. Thank you so much for being with us. Hang on just a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Debbie Hines, trial lawyer, former prosecutor, legal political commentator, LegalSpeaks.com. Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay. Talk to you soon.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Taking back the mainstream media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. Jerry in Amityville, New York, listening to WWRL. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yeah, how you doing? On the situation with Ed Snow and the question you asked earlier, what is patriotism?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, true patriotism to me is not the jingoism that an earlier caller criticized, and rightfully so. Nor is it the act of a true patriot to blindly follow our political leaders off a political cliff. Instead, true patriotism is precisely the act of standing up and defending our nation's democratic principles and values, such as our right that's supposedly fundamental and basic to be secure in our persons, papers, houses, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures. And all Ed Snow did, all he did was to shine a light on how our very own government is violating the Fourth Amendment rights, or seemingly so, of at least 112 million Americans, perhaps even more. And secondly, on this whole double standard issue, I agree with you with respect to the double standard, but it goes way beyond Dick Cheney. I mean, if you look at, if you compare Ed Snow and the way the Justice Department was going after him, and you compare the way the Justice Department under George W. Bush went after
Scooter Libby. Scooter Libby was only prosecuted for lying to prosecutors. He was never prosecuted under the Espionage Act. I think a lot of people forget that, and he was later deported anyway by Bush.
You're right. Excellent point, Jerry. Thank you for calling and making it. You're absolutely right. Steve in River Forest, Illinois, listening to WCPT. You have an antidote for the Ayn Rand thought virus? Really?
Yes, and incidentally, Ronald was quoting her when he said the government is the problem, almost verbatim.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it would be good to ask these people who've been infected and they don't realize it, like Brian Tracy last week, do we, the people, have the ethical authority to regulate our economy, to determine how our natural resources are used, and to set a fair tax rate?
No, not according to libertarians. We do not have that authority. That should be in the hands of the free market.
The belief system says, inherent or implies, insinuates, suggests that individual liberty is the only value. Therefore, we, the people, don't have any legitimate claim to our fate as a nation.
Right, and beyond that, they define individual liberty as economic liberty exclusively. You don't have the freedom to be free from hunger. You don't have the freedom to be free from the fear of freezing to death in the winter. You don't have the freedom to be free from the fear of going out into the workplace without a decent education. You don't have there's a whole variety of freedoms that I would submit Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson worked very hard to give us. And those are freedoms that are not recognized as freedoms by libertarians. And unless you were born wealthy, like, you know, the heroes of Atlas Shrugged, with your daddy having built a railroad, or having been given it by Abraham Lincoln, and you've inherited a great wealth. But that's an excellent antidote. You know, the commons is the place where these guys always fall apart in any kind of rational argument, although they don't realize that they're falling apart, because what they're arguing is that the commons would be better served if it was all privatized. And, you know, we tried that. It was called feudalism, the feudal lords, and they weren't the kings. They were not the political forces of their day. They were the owners. The feudal lords owned everything. They owned the roads. They owned the forests. They hired private sheriffs, like the sheriff of Nottingham, to make sure that anybody who shot anything in the forest had to pay a tax on it, or give a piece of it to the king, to the local lord, the local landowner. Feudalism was all about property rights and placing them above human rights. And that's basically, in my mind, what libertarianism is. Steve, excellent point. Thanks for the call. Merlene in Morriston, Florida. Hey, or Merlene.
Hi there. It's good to talk with you, Tom. Thanks. I wanted to share this with you.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine made an application for a gasoline credit card.
Mm-hmm.
And they got back a reply from them. They needed three more pieces of information. But I thought this was real interesting. One of the paragraphs said, I have a dental treatment, and my enunciation isn't always the best.
Oh, you sound just fine.
To help the U.S. government fight the funding of terrorism and money laundering activities, the USA Patriot Act, which is a federal law, requires all financial institutions to obtain and verify information that identifies each person who opens an account. And they wanted the Social Security birth date and the physical address. But I thought that was real strange to have something like that when someone makes a application for a credit card.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't surprise me.
Yes, these laws they've managed to get passed.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me, Merlene, and it's just one more sign of, you know, how frightened we've become and how sad that is and how, you know, corrosive that is, frankly. So, Merlene, thank you for the call, and thanks for pointing that out. John in Minneapolis, Minnesota. John, we got just a minute to the break. It's yours.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I am very, very angry at Obama, and I would say, his civil liberties record is just atrocious. And I wanted to finish what I said last week, which was the U.S. Patriot Act was used in different cities across this country after Holder versus the Humanitarian Law Project. It's a Supreme Court ruling that was in favor of the Obama administration. Now, today I hear that he's into what he calls the Insider Project, and people who are found guilty, this is in the bureaucracy of the federal government, I would say within any agency, but I'm not really up on it. Maybe you know a little bit more about it. But that they can essentially term a person as an enemy of the people. If you can imagine that.
Wow.
That's
right out of Mao.
Well, yes. And so, I mean, I support my congressman, Senator Franken. I support... Yeah.
John, I'm sorry. We're going to run out of time again. Thank you for the
call. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
But yes, the enemy of the people? Really? 27 minutes past. The bad and the very, very tuzzamuzzly ugly, brought to you by Edison Factor, food for your brain at edisonfactor.com. The good, planting peace. A couple of months ago, we told you about how the activist group Planting Peace was taking the fight against bigotry to the front door of the Westboro Baptist Church by buying a house right across the street from that church's Topeka, Kansas headquarters and decorating it with the colors of the gay pride flag. Well, this weekend, Planting Peace upped the ante. On Saturday night, members of the organization welcomed the friends and family of Kimberly Kim Kidwell and Katie Short to what they called the Equality House to celebrate the couple's wedding. Although same-sex marriage is still illegal in Kansas and the wedding won't be recognized, Planting Peace says it hopes the public ceremony will convince the state Supreme Court to rule in favor of marriage equality sometime this week. Not surprisingly, members of the Westboro Baptist Church picketed the wedding across the street from their church. But despite their protests, the ceremony went off without a hitch. Good work Planting Peace, and congratulations to the newlyweds. The bad. Donald Trump. On today's episode of Fox and Friends, the real estate mogul Americans love to hate blasted NSA leaker Edward Snowden, or NSA whistleblower, calling him a spy and demanding his execution. Check it out.
Well, first of all, he's a terrible guy. I said it right from the beginning. So many people are trying to defend him. Oh, look at what he's revealed. And isn't it wonderful what he's revealed? And yet people marching in his favor. He's a terrible guy who's really set our country back. You know, spies in the old days used to be executed.
Wait a minute, Donald. If Snowden's a spy, then who's he spying for? The American public? Ultimately, Snowden is a journalist's source. And if you want sources to be executed, well, that's just terrifying. And the very, very ugly Bill Cunningham. The conservative radio host finds himself embroiled in controversy after he told Fox legal analyst Tamara Holder to shut up and know her role during a broadcast of the Hannity program last week. Here's a clip of their exchange.
But anyway...
Wait, I mean, you shut up, know your role, and shut your mouth.
My role as a woman.
Yeah.
Right. Cunningham's remarks were so offensive that Fox host Martha McCollum called them out on Friday's episode of America's Newsroom.
Know your role and shut your mouth? Really? Juan Williams is here, Fox News political analyst, Mary Catherine Hamm, editor-at-large for HotAir.com. Is this what we've come to? Is this civil society?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that when even Fox News calls you out for bad behavior, whatever you said is just very, very ugly.
That's incredibly ugly.
Okay, so there's been some speculation that Ed Snowden has gone to Cuba to avoid the reach of American law. Now, where did he get an idea like that? Think about that for a minute. And think about George W. Bush moving things to Cuba to avoid the reach of the American law, right? Guantanamo? No? Yes? Okay, it's like the knock-knock joke in the Trayvon case. I'm sorry. Anyhow, Michael in Dublin, Virginia. Hey, Michael. What's up?
Hey, Tom, are you there?
I am. You're on the air.
All right. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
You know, the Beltway Media serve as a mouthpiece for the political globalists and or the world empire that they call themselves. But it's such a small group that they did not notice a superior mind in Edward Snowden, who is a liberal, who is a true patriot and soldier for the new resistance. I'm letting everybody know. And there are other leaks. There are going to be others who will step forward. This is where it starts. Now, do the American people get disconnected? See, they understand that journalism is the bridge that connects them to us, to our free will.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. And that's why, you know, we're all in this together to awaken, to disrupt the their bridge.
Well, I don't think we're all in this necessarily together to disrupt it, but certainly to awaken to it, because the idea that the government should run a spy service is actually a good idea. The idea that it should be outsourced to a corporation which is owned by a corporation which is owned in part by the Bin Laden family is a bad idea. The Bin Laden family are substantial investors in the Carlyle Group. The Carlyle Group owns a majority share in Booz Allen Hamilton, and Booz Allen Hamilton is the company for which Ed Snowden used to work. Now, tell me that makes any sense. I don't get it.
Yes.
So I think your premise that there's more leakers to come may well be right. I mean, that's what they were trying to prevent when they tortured Bradley Manning for year after year after year and did so publicly and bragged about it. And if they get their hands on Julian Assange or on Ed Snowden, they're going to do the same thing, I believe, because they're trying to make an example of them so that nobody else will have the courage to come forward. The people, you know, knowing that it's a death sentence. I mean, how many people voluntarily walk into death? Not a whole lot. Or if they do, they require a lot of structure around them, like something like the U.S. Army, you know, with lots of flags and patriotism and the whole family supporting them for joining and all that stuff. And being a whistleblower is a very lonely, solitary thing. It's the exact opposite of that. So I think a lot of this is going to depend on how the next week or two or month or two plays out. If Ecuador establishes itself as a place where American whistleblowers can go, or Cuba does, or Russia does, or Hong Kong does, and Hong Kong has already said, basically, you know, we didn't like this and we don't want it to happen again. So I doubt that anybody else is going to go to Hong Kong, but if, you know, it may well be that there will be more. Our goal, though, should be a situation where, you know, whistleblowers are unnecessary because there's no whistle to blow. There's no wrongdoing. There's no giant spy on everybody system. Or if there is, it's in the hands of government bureaucrats who have their own internal whistleblower mechanisms that allow them to be whistleblowers and not go to jail and not be tortured and not have to go to Hong Kong, and that, you know, has accountability and transparency at least to Congress. So, Michael, interesting take. Thank you for the call. Lawrence in Berkeley, California. Hey, Lawrence, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? I just want to explain why I'm so in love with Edward Snowden and why he's so important.
Okay.
Because when the government spies on us, they don't spy just to spy. Ultimately, just to keep files, they're going to change political behavior. And what they do is they pick the organizations or the people that they want, and they infiltrate agent provocateurs into them to change what political organizations or people are doing. And I have two examples of that, one's from 1969 and one from 1971 in Berkeley, which changed the total tenor of the Berkeley movement in those days, if you want to hear more of the details.
If they're brief.
Okay. For People's Park, I know there are people who were born since then who don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
It took the National Guard and about 12 police agencies to shut it down. And they only managed to do it temporarily. People's Park is still there.
Mm-hmm.
But there was another park four blocks away called Willard Park, that, which was prevented from being built by the people by one infiltrating police agent. Very few people know that, even in Berkeley. A guy who infiltrated the neighborhood organization that was contemplating building the park, theoretically representing the street people. And every time it looked as though there was going to be an agreement, he got up and said, "This is our non-negotiable demand for all the people I represent. You cannot do that." So the neighborhood decided to have the park built by the city. And a year later, this gentleman was out with a police uniform. The second thing was even greater. In 1971, Berkeley elected an FBI agent to the city council.
Unknowingly.
He was elected by the left. He infiltrated the left. His name was D'Army Bailey. And his job was to disrupt the left once he got on the council.
Mm-hmm.
And he did this by calling the person who later became our mayor and is now on the assembly, Ms. Hancock, calling her publicly in the city council meetings a filthy bourgeois bitch incessantly every meeting. He got himself recalled, and the left in Berkeley was totally split down the middle because some of them said, no, he's the real third world. He was black. He's the real third world deal. He's the real third world revolutionary. And then others, of course, said, no, we can't have him. We're going to go along and vote to have him recalled.
Right.
And he accomplished what he meant to do, which was to split the left in about six different directions.
Wow.
So this is what happens when you get spying. It's continuing till today. In Occupy Oakland,
yep.
There was somebody who burnt an American flag on television.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any proof of it. But everybody believes that that had to be a police agent.
Yeah. Well, my personal experience, I remember SDS at MSU in 1968, and the guy we learned years later when the Red Squad files were finally, pulled out by FOIA, the guy who was always yelling, firebomb this and shoot that, and, nobody ever did, but he was always yelling for it, turned out that he was an agent provocateur. So I understand that. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So maybe I shouldn't be so heartfelt in my support of spying, but, I meant international. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Rick in Weston, West Virginia. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
I always do. I got 2 points, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how your lady that answers the phones know who it is. But anyway, this Trayvon Martin thing,
mm-hmm.
Stand Your Ground law.
Right.
Essentially, if I understand it correctly, he was told by 911 not to pursue him. He was
yes.
told,
He was.
But he pursued him anyway.
Right.
At the very least, I believe he's guilty of a second-degree murder.
Yeah, provoking a situation which caused a person's death.
Right, and obviously you can tell the guy's racist. I got black friends in Florida. Some of them have family up here in West Virginia.
Hmm.
I was raised right outside of D.C. in an integrated school system. But ignorance is ignorance, and I don't even know why the taxpayers got to foot the bill for this. I'll be in and out. He did it. They all paid a crime. And I was very impressed how Trayvon Martin's dad conducted himself. But here in West Virginia, somebody's got to be in my house, inside my house, before it's a justifiable justifiable defense.
Mm-hmm.
West Virginia's pretty pro-gun, but they ain't mostly nuts.
Right. There you go. Well said. Well said, Rick. Thanks a lot for calling and sharing that with us. I love it. That was really well said. Steve in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
Thank you for taking the call, Tom, and a great
sure.
show today.
Thank you.
I wanted to comment on patriotism and my definition of it and why I think it's substantially different than what I see on the right. My definition is pretty simple. It's love of country, just like you would love your wife or your kids or your significant other or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But true grown-up love is being able to look somebody in the eye and, first of all, recognizing their faults, that they're not perfect, and when they engage in behavior that is destructive, to say, hey, you know, you could really have a drinking problem. You really have an issue with this behavior or that behavior.
Yeah.
That's love.
And now, this was an intervention, what Snowden did. You know, it was an intervention.
The difference, I think, between what I view patriotism as and what Ayn Rand and what I told your screener was, look at a speech by Frederick Hayek to the Chicago Economic Club in 1974, where he said the problem isn't just government, like Ayn Rand says. The problem is democracy.
Right.
And it was a shocking thing to me. But essentially his thesis was that because true democracy or representative government, Republican government like we have, mm-hmm. allows you to vote no matter what your economic worth is, and there are always going to be more poor people than rich people. Poor people are going to vote themselves government that essentially confiscates the means of production and the wealth of the rich.
Right.
So it just flew completely in the face of everything that, I mean, I read this in college and couldn't believe it and took it to a professor of mine. He said, that's exactly right. And I was studying then the Rands and the Friedmans and the Hayeks and the James Buchanans.
Mm-hmm.
I just encourage everybody, don't believe us when we say they're against, when somebody like me says they're against government.
It's been a while since with the Ayn Rand Society has basically stopped sending us guests. But I used to debate these guys, once a month, and they will just come right out and say without any hesitation and with absolute pride that they're not in favor of small D democracy in a small R Republican government. They're not in favor of that. They think that that's a corruptible system for the reason that you just described. But history shows that when people have the ability to vote themselves a large chunk of somebody else's wealth, they will do so in a small way, but they will not do so in a large way. They will not do so in a way that destroys other people's wealth, which is the fear of the libertarians and the Ayn Rand folks. And Hayek was wrong.
That's exactly right. And Ayn Rand, too, is not only is she anti-democratic, she's and her followers, they're anti-Christian, too.
Yes, which, aggressively braggingly so.
Can you imagine what would have happened in any election had the Democratic vice presidential candidate been passing out, enforcing his staff to read as a condition of their job?
The writings of a notorious atheist.
They would have gone through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks,
Tom. Thank you, Steve. Very well said. Chris in Ayer, Massachusetts. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Great.
I just wanted to translate a little story. Remember last week you had that caller who talked about how the reason that Americans get fleeced is because we pay taxes and then we talk about paying for health insurance on top of that.
Right.
I don't know if you recall it, but it was last week. And
mm-hmm.
I figured out what Republicans and I guess the conservatives and the liberals need to come together on.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans are right that taxes are too high because liberals are right that we don't get anything out of it.
And in fact, there's a really interesting article that is over at Truthout. And the headline just says the whole thing. Canadians pay taxes for universal health care and now they're richer than us.
All right. You're the one who always lets out the greatest stats that I use on everyone, I browbeat in my daily life with, including the one on the Australian net worth compared to our net worth. But
yes.
Here's an example of in January, I took a job last September. I found out the company I was working for was committing insurance fraud. So they quote unquote reorganized and I was laid off, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
I started my own business and I ended up getting hurt last week. So I called and I said, listen, I was on unemployment. It's running out. I haven't been taking any money from the company. I've hurt myself. What am I going to do? And they said, well, did it happen, at work or outside of work? And I said, oh, well, it happened at work. And they said, and then I realized I thought about you. So we pay our taxes. Then I pay for private health care during out of work hours. And then I have to pay for public health care for during work hours.
Right.
And now that I'm self-employed and hurt, none of that spending.
So they're saying that this is a workman's comp issue, not a health insurance issue.
Saying that because it's workman's comp and I'm self-employed and I haven't made any money, that workers' comp isn't going to be able to pay me.
Right, because you don't have a workman's comp policy with a large insurer that you've paid a lot of money. Amazing. Chris, and people wonder what happened to entrepreneurialism in America. Chris, thank you for sharing your story with us. Thanks for calling. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be talking about the updates on Ed Snowden's whereabouts, any news from the Supreme Court, and the latest going on in Congress, plus the best of the rest of the news and your calls. And don't forget, democracy starts when you participate. Go to free-don.com and send them a note, send them a few bucks. Go to movetoamend.org.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
And don't forget, tag your it